Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we're taking you into a stack of research papers, commercial roadmaps, and, well, biosecurity frameworks.
Yeah, to really understand a completely wild shift in technology.
Right. Our mission here is to figure out how living cells and actual DNA are, like, officially replacing silicon chips.
Which sounds like science fiction, I know.
It really does. And to set the stage for you, just picture the frontier supercomputer. It requires 24.6 megawatts of power to run.
Massive amounts of energy.
Exactly. Meanwhile, the human brain inside your head is doing complex associative reasoning and learning on a mere 20 watts. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Well, that millionfold advantage in energy efficiency is exactly why the industry is looking at biology. I mean, we've basically hit a physical wall with silicon.
Right. Specifically, something called the von Neumann bottleneck.
Yeah.
Which is the fundamental flaw in how our current solid-state devices work. Like, imagine trying to cook in a kitchen where your fridge, which is your memory, and your stove, the processor, are in totally different zip codes.
You waste massive amounts of time and energy just shuttling the ingredients back and forth.
Right, exactly.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, biological brains completely bypass that kitchen commute. They inherently unify memory and processing in the exact same physical space.
Like at the synapses.
Right, at the synaptic junctions between neurons, processing and memory storage happen simultaneously. So there's no shuttling of data across a physical bus. It's instantly localized.
Okay, but is anyone actually building a computer like that outside of, you know, a theoretical lab?
Oh, they are. We're looking at commercially available wetware right now.
Wetware?
Yeah. Cortical Labs actually built a desktop biological computer called the CL1. For $35,000, you get a system running on 800,000 living human neurons.
Oh, wow.
And they literally taught this biological tissue to play the video game Pong.
That is insane.
And there's also Final Spark. They offer a cloud service for $500 a month where you can remotely run code on 160,000 living neurons.
Okay, wait. Here's where it gets really interesting, though. You're talking about living human cells running a server.
Yeah.
I mean, cells need to eat. They generate waste. They die. How on earth do you maintain an IT infrastructure that is biologically mortal? Like, how long do these literal brain chips last?
Well, you hit on the major limitation. They only live for about 100 days due to a physiological limit called core necrosis.
Core necrosis.
Yeah, because these clumps of cells don't have a vascular system to pump blood around. Oxygen and nutrients basically just have to seep in from the outside.
Oh, and I imagine that only penetrates so far into the tissue.
Right. Past a depth of about 800 micrometers, that diffusion physically stops working. So the center of the tissue literally suffocates.
Wow.
And even to get those 100 days, you have to keep them in strict incubators. They're fed constantly with sterile media at 37 degrees Celsius and 5% carbon dioxide.
So beyond the complex life support systems, I mean, these are human neurons that adapt and learn. At what point do we have to start worrying about what these clumps of cells are actually experiencing?
Yeah, that sentience debate is triggering massive neuroethical alarms right now. The scientific community is currently scrambling to regulate wetware with frameworks like the Declaration of Baltimore.
Right.
They're really trying to figure out the moral status of a conscious biological computer.
So while wetware solves the processor problem, it comes with a massive ethical headache. But on the memory side of the equation, we're using biology in a way that avoids the ethics entirely, right?
Exactly. By using non-living acellular DNA. To protect that non-living data, researchers are using a technique called fossil mimetic vitrification.
Wait, fossil mimetic vitrification? Are we talking about trapping DNA in glass? Like a microscopic mosquito in amber?
That is a perfect way to picture it, actually. They encapsulate dehydrated DNA inside nanometer scale silica shells.
Wow.
And the inorganic silica matrix physically blocks out water molecules and oxygen, which, you know, usually degrade DNA by breaking its backbone.
So it preserves it.
Right. Locking it in this glass-like state gives the data a proven shelf life of over 2,000 years at ambient room temperature.
So what does this all mean for you listening? Just imagine looking at your desk right now. Instead of a massive, warring hard drive, you just have a single test tube holding thousands of terabytes and consuming absolutely zero power.
What's fascinating here is the thermodynamic contrast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wetware is an open system needing constant metabolic energy and microfluidic feeding just to survive a whole month.
Yeah.
But silicon-cased DNA is beautifully passive. It's just frozen in time.
We've essentially split the silicon chip in two. We have energy-guzzling, living brain clouds for processing, and immortal zero-power DNA archives for storage.
Yeah. Both are stepping in to solve the physical limits of traditional solid-state devices, just relying on billions of years of biological evolution to do it.
Which leaves you with one final thought to chew on today. Remember that core necrosis problem we talked about earlier?
Oh, yeah.
Well, researchers are currently trying to 3D print actual blood vessels into these neural organoids so the centers stop dying. If they succeed, allowing these biological computers to grow massively and live indefinitely, at what exact neuron count will bioethicists be forced to grant a server rack basic human rights? We started by marveling at how efficient a 20-watt brain is, but we might end up having to negotiate with the supercomputer it powers.